It's time, baby. Welcome in. This is the Bite Me Fishing Show, and glad you could join us with Captain Scott Null, Captain Dean Thomas, and Captain Caleb McCumber. I'm John Lopez. Hope you guys have had a chance to get out lately. I know the weather has made some things unpredictable, and we'll get to that, but let's start right here.
The topic is don't be bashful about changing baits and retrieves. So I want to tell a quick story, very quick story real quick. So I had mixed results, as I mentioned, fishing off the boat, wading, et cetera. I was down in Rockport, Copano, and then, of course, in East Matagorda Bay. So got up really, really early, I was on the water by 5:15 one day last week. And I get to my spot, and I'm telling you, it was the best assortment of slicks I've seen in probably 2 or 3 years. I mean, Caleb, Scott, they were popping. I could see them the size of a 5-gallon bucket starting. And then I was surrounded by, at one point, probably 8 to 10 slicks popping right as I got there. And it's still dark, barely getting some light. And I start throwing, and I'm waiting, which, by the way, shout out to Wade Wright, because I got into some thick mud and I had to almost go to a knee once when I was getting out. And I had that rod in the holder, and that Wade Wright belt really saved me from taking a spill. But so I'm casting, and I'm thinking I got to change this bait because the window's going to be small. So I changed my bait. I changed the color, and I normally don't change a lot, Caleb. And then I went topwater. Then I went corky, and I just wasn't getting bites. And I'm like, okay, retrieve. Okay. It's all about the retrieve now. So I started really dragging it down, slowly on the bottom, and boom, got that hit. And so normally, you know, we talk about, you got to, you know, trust the motion, trust the more the profile than the color. This was all about retrieve. They were popping all around, and I wasn't catching squat until I changed the retrieve, Caleb. So that's one of those things. I want to start with you here. I think I might have said Scott earlier, but I know you wade fish a lot. You know, when that happens, and by the way, all the slicks were gone within 40 minutes. That was it. 40-minute window.
Yeah, you're catching that summertime early, sun's coming up, they're going to get something to eat, and then 9 o'clock, they are done, absolutely over it. Any time that you've got fish, or you have evidence of fish around you, and you're having a hard time getting bites, it's time to, I would probably go retrieve first, to be honest, because like you said, it's a short time window, so I don't want to eat up a lot of time changing lures. I would probably go retrieve first. I'd, you know, high and fast, you know, middle of the water column, mid speeds, and then dragging on bottom to see what happens. And if I'm not getting bites out of that, then that's whenever I'm going to change my lure. Now, whether I go to a completely different type of lure, like, you know, say I'm throwing a rat tail and then I'm not getting bit. I don't know if I would go straight to a paddle tail or something, or if I would maybe change colors of that rat tail first. Probably go on over to the paddle tail, just because if I'm not getting any bites on that, then, you know, maybe I can get some bites. And then maybe if you're getting like a bite here and there on the paddle tail, then you start honing in on the color. But it's anytime you're in that negative bite, it's not a bad idea to change up what you're doing. And that's why we talk so much about when you have multiple people fishing, especially when you're starting out for the day, you know, everybody throw something different and see if you can clue in on what it is they're looking for.
You know, Scott, you know, we talk about retrieve, and Caleb just mentioned that. Is that something that's maybe more unique to these hot, 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 hot days? We always talk about slow it down when it's real cold, and maybe people overreact to that. But this was hot, and I was in the water, like I said, probably 5:45 at the latest, and it was about the retrieve. It wasn't about color or profile.
And I've been watching these fish from the polling platform, and they're just done. I mean, they're so hot. Water temperature this past week, I mean, the lows in the morning has been 90 down here. The highs in the afternoons, 94 degrees, I saw the other day. And that's cooking. And these fish just don't have any oxygen. I just don't think that they've got, you know, they just don't have that vigor. You know, we all get it. When it gets hot, you want to slow down. And I just don't think that they're in that chase mode when it's that hot. It takes up a lot of energy, a lot of oxygen in order to chase a bait down. So it really just needs to fall right in front of them. The bites we got this week were all like that. I can see the fish. I know what they're doing, and they would not chase a bait more than a foot. I mean, it really wouldn't. I mean, it had to literally fall right on their nose. I've got, you know, I had Jimmy Gwynn out a couple of times this past week. He was down for a few days staying here in Port O'Connor, and he's a damn good fisherman. He switched up baits. He tried all different kind of things, throwing a topwater. We were getting follows. They'd turn and look at it, but it was like once it got past them, they didn't want anything to do with it.
Like, ah.
You know, I mean, as it was coming to them, you know, they looked at it, and they'd turn towards it, and they'd get looking right, and you think, okay, here it comes, here it comes, and then they just turn off of it and just sink back down.
And so a lot of them just, flushing.
Yeah, we need a good flush. We need some cooler water. We need a rain. We need a big rain event. I think everything's really, really salty too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that even back in the marshes and the backwaters, I'm getting salt crust after I get wet, and it evaporates, which evaporates pretty damn fast.
Yeah.
There's salt crust everywhere. So that water is really, really salty in a lot of places where it's normally pretty brackish.
What are some other things that you're thinking, Caleb? Because I was frustrated, and then I realized, you know, it probably was the heat even at the early morning hour. But I'm sure, you know, you guys, where you are right now in East Matagorda, are experiencing many of the same things. What are some, right? Again, we're trying to help our listeners, as we just talked about, like the instructional stuff. That's what I did. I had some success. What are some other things that you kick around?
I'm probably going to slide out a little bit deeper and then like you did, slow it down and get it down in deeper water. That deeper water should be a little bit cooler than the stuff on the top. I'm going to slide out deeper, bounce it on bottom. Like Scott was saying, they're not really just after it. They're not seeking and destroying like they would be in the spring or the fall. And so I'm going to give them a slower moving, easier meal to look at and decide that they want to go pick that up. I know the GRS tournament was this weekend, Redfish tournament, and a lot of people struggled. And of the two or three tournaments they had this weekend, all of them were won in deep water, from my understanding. There's one or two guys that cast a check that I don't know what they're doing, but there's a lot that were. And the deeper water that were in the cooler fish were the ones that were more active and cooperative.
So when we say flush, Scott, we mean, you know, some big tropical event that's going to pretty much bring water up and down the whole coast. So we need one of those. I think we talked about this last year. We had a good tropical storm. You know, a good tropical storm is just a big dump with a little wind. Doesn't hurt anybody. Not a lot of flooding, but just a good tropical dump to lower those temperatures. You even get into the mid 80s. You know, at the heat of the day, and you're going to be good, right?
Yeah, anything that would cool it off a little bit. We had that one, I guess it was last year, that just skirted the coast.
Yeah.
Stayed as a tropical storm, and it just went all the way down the coastline, and it got everybody. And we need something along those lines. Sunday morning, I had a game plan, you know, to work the incoming cooler water, and I picked a flat that was right off of the deep gut coming from Pascavallo up onto the flat, usually has some really good flow to it. And man, I thought, all right, we got incoming tide in the morning. That'll be some cooler water. It'll have them active. There was fish up there on Friday. Yeah, I should have some fish there on Sunday. Everything should be good. There was nothing. I mean, there wasn't bait. There wasn't anything working. I have no idea what the hell happened. Then I found fish way, way in the back where it was shallow and hot. I have no idea what the hell they were doing back there.
That goes right back to that rule that we always say that fish really don't give a damn what we think we know about them. Man, you can have the best plan in the world. That the same thing happened to me. I forget what I talk about on this show, but when Daniel and I were at that tournament, the water temperature was 94. There was 3 feet deep water and then a gradual slope as far as the eye could see. And school after school after school of fish. And these fools were in 10 inches of water, and they were up in a coontail, hydrilla, whatever you want to call it, where the water is just super stagnant and super hot. And they would not come out of it and go out to where I guarantee you there was 10 million bait fish and 3 foot of cooler water 40 yards away from them. They would not come out of that shallow, hot, miserable stuff for a week.
Well, and we're going to hear from Dean in just a little bit. And that's something that he was talking about, that our listeners are going to get some, you know, some more insight from the lower coast. But just to kind of put a bow on that, it's interesting because when I was in Copano, I had my daughter-in-law and future daughter-in-law on the boat at one point. my daughter-in-law and son-in-law at one point. And you also lose kind of, you kind of lose track of what our standards are, your standards are, and what people who just want to catch fish, their standard is. Because we caught some, a couple of little trout, a croaker, and a ton of gaff top when I took them out fishing. And I came home and I told my wife, I said, man, any other day, I would be really ticked off at that day. Not that, it's always good to catch fish, but they were thrilled. And, they were thrilled because they got that big pull from the gaff top. They got the croaker and a couple of little trout, even though they were undersized, they weren't going to keep them anyway. So you almost got to change that approach
into some really detailed talk on expectations and a lot more. If you have not subscribed yet to this show, be sure to do that. It's everywhere there are podcasts, but what we recommend most is Podbean and sportsradio610.com because you can get every show we've ever done, plus some segments like today's Smoke It Up chat with Pits and Spits owner Coy Christoffel, separated into their own segments a couple of days after it airs here. Okay, so not everyone on the boat has the same expectations we do or that others have. Caleb, do you ever get that light bulb moment, so to speak, realizing that what you're doing may not be good enough for you, but it could be awesome for someone else?
That's the hardest. That is the hardest thing about being a guide. Scott and Dean and I and everybody will tell you, we never know what that person's expectation really is on our boat. I've had days where I thought that we just smoked them. I mean, it was the most fun I'd had in a month. And the customer's like, yeah, it's pretty cool, And then I've had other days where
not bad.
Yeah, I've had other days where like, oh man, this guy hates me. And then we get back in the boat and as we're headed home, they won't shut up about what a great time it was. And, that 50-pound black drum that I wanted to put a gun in my mouth for 45 minutes watching them fight it. That was just the highlight of their life to catch that big old thing. Yeah. And I mean, that it's 100% true. It beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, that too. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah. Well, Sunday was a good example. I really good fisherman. He fishes with me regular. He's got me booked like every 3 weeks or so. And he knew it was going to be tough. We had negative tides. It was just wind blowing. We had a straight west wind for whatever reason. Southeast at 10 was the prediction. West at 18, 19 is what we got. And I'm pulling.
I think I was on the water that day.
I was pulling hard. It was a good test for the shoulder.
Yeah.
But we saw fish, and he knew going in that it was a tough day. And that's the other part of it. When you have regular guys, who fish a lot, they look at the conditions too. And they're looking at those conditions going, man, this is going to be tough today.
They know the expectation. Yeah.
And they lower their expectations. And I put them in front of a bunch of fish. Mm-hmm. And in fact, for whatever reason, way in the hell in the back of the middle of nowhere, we come around a corner and there's 50, 60 fish tailing, all in a big group, tailing in 8 to 10 inches of water, a foot of water.
And you're like, I meant to do that.
Yeah, that was awesome. I mean, and we got a fish out of it and they all blew up and disappeared on us and thought we were going to chase them down again, but they had other ideas. Mm-hmm. But that was a highlight of the day. I mean, it went beyond his expectations. Because his expectations were really, really low when we were leaving the dock.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then you've got other days when it's perfect conditions and you're thinking, oh, man, here we go. This is it. This is going to be good. And for whatever reason, the fish decide to take that day off and you struggle. That's the hardest days.
Yeah.
When you've got bad conditions when you're leaving the dock and you know it's going to be tough, you're going to push it as hard as you can. You're going to try everything that you can come up with. But you know in your heart, if we catch one or two or three fish today, especially we were fly fishing too. It was at another level to it. Then, you're good with it. I feel pretty good at the end of the day that I put them in front of a bunch of fish, but on those perfect days and nothing happens,
you feel like a loser.
That's when you really, really feel like, man, I forgot how to fish today. There's just nothing I could do to find them. Luckily I've been on a bunch of fish lately, so.
Well, we'll get to that. At some point, but it was very refreshing for me because those kids came up. Well, I say kids, they're in their early 30s, but they came off the boat and that was awesome. I'm like, it was okay. Well,
that's what I love about. I do some kid trips every year. Yeah, I've got a handful of trips. Where I take 8, 9, 10 year olds out, mm-hmm. and we get some live shrimp. And we just go catch stuff. catch all kinds of stuff. And those are the most fun days.
Yeah.
They're fun for me. They're fun for the kids. And there was one last year where the boys kept count of how many different species they had. And I think it was 9 or 10 different species of fish. And they thought that was cool.
That's very cool.
It's not all about trout and redfish. It's right. It's just about catching something.
Yeah. Good thing, because the next day I took out a one of our listeners that won he bid on an auction to fish with me. And we saw all those slicks again. I didn't catch much. And they ended up catching about, I think, probably 15 hardheads on all plastics. So go figure. I was the hardhead king that day. All right. So back to the boat. It kind of ties in with that point that you both just made about, you know, the expectations. I've always assumed that everybody has fished with a topwater from a boat. That's how I learned to fish with a topwater. But a lot of our listeners, and nothing to be ashamed about, that's why we ask for the questions, because everybody can learn from these podcasts, and everybody might have some people might have the same question. The question is this: here's an idea for a topic to discuss: catching fish with a topwater bait from a boat. For those of us that don't really wade fish much, and mostly go from the boat. Scott, I know you both like to throw, but I'm gonna start with you. Topwaters. At first I was like, wow, that's a little bit surprising, but it probably shouldn't be. Some people are just kind of intimidated by topwaters. Is there anything they should know and do about, you know, starting to throw topwaters from a boat?
Rod angle is probably the most critical part of it. At the end, you can throw a topwater a mile. So you throw it as far as you can throw it, and you start working it back. You got your rod tip up more, and then as it gets closer, you want to drop that rod tip down and to the side a little bit and keep working it. That's probably the hardest part for people. You know, they want to work it always with the rod tip up. Well, as it gets closer, that line angle gets steeper, and the nose of the lure wants to rise up a little more, and it quits walking as well.
Mm-hmm.
On the blow-ups, you tend to pull it away from them a lot more when you're up higher like that out of the boat. I see it all the time. As soon as that fish swirls on it, you try to set the hook. In a boat, it's critical to go ahead and hold off for just a second, make sure you feel some weight on it, and then set the rod, you know, set it low so you're not, you know, pulling straight up out of the water on them. Because if they miss it and you've set the hooks sideways and low, they may come back and hit it again if you're not pulling that lure away from them too much. If you got it too close and you jerk it straight up, that lure comes flying out of the water. They're not going to chase it.
It might hit your forehead.
You're not going to get that follow-up. Yeah. Those are probably the two main things. The other is, if you're drift fishing, you got to work it faster. You know, you're throwing it downwind on the drift and the boat's moving and your lure's moving. And if you're not reeling a little bit faster, you're catching up to your lure and it's not really working all that well for you.
Well, Scott kind of hungry hippoed all of the easy stuff to talk about on that one.
Well, I got a question for you to follow up and get your thoughts on. If there's very little wind, I will, or I put my power pole down, I'll do the same thing with a corky. A lot of people say don't work a corky from a boat. If there's very little wind or you're in a spot where you can do it, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, if you're moving slow enough, you can definitely throw a corky, topwater, anything. I'll elaborate on what Scott said just a little bit, because it may have confused some folks just in interpretation. And that is, if you're on the boat, you have to work it faster. Your reel handle has to work faster. You never want slack in the line of your topwater, because the little instantaneous moment of slack you get is what makes it walk back and forth, but it's got to come tight immediately after that. So you really have to learn the ratio of reeling to working to drifting and all of that. If you've got a crosswind and it's any kind of a heavy crosswind, you pretty much got to cast downwind, or else the wind bow will take it around on you. But if you're going slow, especially if your power pulled down, you can work the heck out of a topwater from or a corky from the boat. We do it all the time. Red fishing, we'll power pull down. We get one blow up, we power pull down, and then we work the whole area and mm-hmm. you know, different speeds, different ways. But like Scott said, you know, keep your rod tip down to the side. It depends on the boat you're running. Whenever I was running the deep V over in Galveston, I'd stand on the edge of the boat and my rod tip would be pointed straight down at the water almost the entire time. on my shallower boats that are closer to the water is more, you know, to my side. But very rarely is it straight up in the air unless I've just really bombed it way out there. And then, you know, again, hungry hippo over here. Whenever you see that blow up, I just reel down and
that's
and
exactly wait what I was going to ask you
until yeah. I feel some weight.
You almost go into bass fishing mode when you're working a top. That's how I would explain it to people. Yeah. When you're working a top water from a boat, you know, bass fishermen, they tell you to reel down. And a lot of times with a popping cork, too, they'll tell you to reel down and then set the hook. Would you agree with that?
Purely, I reel down to where my rod is pointed straight at the fish, and whenever I feel tension, I'll set the hook. They usually don't. If you don't do this, you don't have the confidence in it. But it's a pretty common thing for me and my buddies to take the hooks off of our topwaters if we're pre-fishing tournaments and we don't want to catch the fish. If we're filming content for YouTube and we just want blowups, we take the hooks off. And a lot of the times that fish will pull drag for 2 or 3 or 4 seconds before he lets go of that top water. So I'm not real worried about him letting go in the time it takes me to reel down and make sure he's there.
That's really good information. All right, real quick, we're going to come back and we're going to get a quick hit on tarpon from Scott. And of course, Scott and Caleb reading bait at the jetties. We might get to it. But real quick, let's go down to Aransas Pass. Had a really fun conversation with our friend, Captain Dean Thomas. So many of our listeners, as you know, and you've told us in the past, a lot of our listeners get on your boat and talk about the Bite Me podcast and some of the great things that they've heard you say and Captain Scott and Captain Null say, Captain Scott and Captain Caleb say on there. But we are down now on the lower coast, Aransas Pass. Of course, you fish out of here. You got your boat here. Newer boat than the last one I was on with you, I think. But let's get an overview of what's happening, and then I want to get into some maybe some of the factors that are happening with the hot water temperatures. We've had some rain, but how does that affect it? But the overview of what's happening right now, last year when we spoke, we talked about effects of the freeze and some of those other things. Just take us from that moment until we are now for our lower coast listeners.
Well, thank you very much, man. And first of all, always a pleasure to have you here in Aransas Pass. Always cool to be on the podcast with the Bite Me fans. We get so many fans that come out to the boat. Always a pleasure to visit with them on the water, and they always mention the podcast as we're headed out on our fishing trips. Man, it's always a good time, but right now summertime is tough. It's a challenge, and there's a lot going on for sure. We spend a lot of hot days out there exploring, looking for fish. It's been very challenging. We're going to take some time this morning and talk about all of those challenges. Most of all, it's the heat. If you're going to spend long days on the water, you really got to be prepared for that. One of the things that people do during the summertime, whether we're kayaking or on the boat, they always ask me the same question. They're like, how do you do this every day? And I kind of laugh and, you know, respond with, if you're going to be out there every day, you have to treat your body like it's a marathon. So yeah, we get out early, we do our thing. But those conditions are specific, you know, and then we get a chance to shift gears later in the summer. We go out to deep water. We get to go to the jetties. We get to chase kingfish and Jack Crevel and Bonita and Spanish mackerel and a lot of big game species that are available, you know, to small boats in the summer. So quite a variety of things going on. And thank you very much for being here today.
All right, let's get into the nuts and bolts of catching some fish for our listeners. You mentioned the water temp. I mentioned the water temp. You and I were talking right before we started recording about deeper water drop-offs, long drifts. Patience is a virtue, as the old saying goes. But what would maybe put some of those odds in your favor for guys that are coming down on the weekend, guys coming down maybe 2 or 3 times a month, you know, just like what they should do to maybe put the odds in their favor a little bit. Maybe not the flats, huh?
So the water temperature is a critical part of the game this year, time of year, figuring that stuff out. So in the ultra shallow flats, the crystal clear water that we spend most of our days in, the water temperature varies more. It's much cooler in the morning and much, much hotter in the afternoon. So the large predatory fish that we are pursuing do require oxygen to propel their larger bodies. You'll find a lot of mullet, which have specific adaptations that allow them to survive in very shallow, hot, unoxygenated water. But the large redfish, large speckled trout, they're going to spend limited time in those areas, which is very early morning, early, overnight, and such as that. So the water temperatures that we found in the ultra shallow water has been dropping to like 80 degrees, which it's crazy to think that 80 degrees is cool right now, but those water temperatures are reaching 89 and 90 degrees in the afternoon. So we've been drifting a lot as the last few weeks have passed by. We've spent a lot of time searching those areas, and I've actually tried to prove a point that if it was not just me missing the fish or if it was overall. So I've ventured out to different areas. We've explored a lot more distance. We've put much more time into very long drifts just to see what those fish are doing. And we've spotted some fish on the flats, but throwing lures and plastic items at them has not always produced the results we like. They're very lethargic. They're very likely to just disregard what you're throwing. It's crazy. They don't even spook. They don't really blast out of the area. They just casually swim away and settle down, you know, 20 to 30 feet away from the boat. So it's just a sign of what they're going through right now. So we've been spending most of our time to be productive in deeper water, 4 to 6 feet, deeper grass beds. And most of that has been speckled trout, which has been a good sign that we have had pretty decent catches of speckled trout. You know, post-freeze, there's been a lot of discussion about the recovery. The limits here changed, and that slot got smaller. And we're still catching some nice speckled trout because of changing tactics due to the heat.
Define nice speckled trout. The slot, obviously 17 to 23 now, down here, just like it is where I fish. But you say deeper water. It seems like we're getting more spawns. Are they growing pretty quick? Or are there some bigger trout that maybe survived the freeze that we didn't expect when we saw the big kill?
So when I talk about deeper water, it's really relative to our surroundings. The majority of our bays are 2 to 3 feet deep and even shallower in, you know, vast expansive areas. The deeper water that I speak of is the edges of the channels, the drop-offs that are adjacent to the flats. Those are like 4 to 6 feet deep. And even in that 4 feet of water, because it's hard to see the bottom, there are sporadic grass beds down there. So if you locate those grass beds, you will find the speckled trout. And as far as the size goes, there's still a lot of schoolies, 14 inchers, 16 inchers, which, you know, 16 and a halves a year ago were keeper size fish. And that is 17 to 23 now. The slot, 17 inches to 23 inches with no oversize allowed keeper. So we're getting a lot of fish in the middle slot, though, from 17 to 23. Not a lot above that size right now, but a lot of schoolies, consistent action. And when you locate those grass beds, you can find one little grass bed that has a nest of trout on them. And, you know, we've had days where we can pick off 10 or 15 trout by drifting, catching the first one, putting the pole down, being patient right there. And they're very technique oriented too. You can't just randomly throw a soft plastic. It's been letting it sink to the bottom. The fish are really attached to those grass beds. So we step up on the boat. As you cast, you give it like 10 seconds to just let it go down to the bottom. And then you get a couple of quick pops, pop, pop, pop it. And then you get their attention. And then it's just a steady swim retrieve across that grass and you'll get that hit. And if you vary that retrieve, you will find that they just don't respond to it. So it's kind of crazy that they're very technique oriented right now. We're looking forward to July as the kingfish come into the shoreline. And that's what usually bells us out on summer. We shift gears and we go for some big game species that are well within reach of the little boats. So that's always a fun prospect. It breaks up the day. When you're trolling, the boat is moving. You know, you create your own wind. And it's a a nice addition to beating the heat.
All right, a couple things. This is really interesting stuff, especially the stuff about the how to work it. Don't think I didn't put that in the back of my mind because I'm going fishing later today because I'll be out in those deep edges myself. But I kind of know our listeners, and a lot of them throw bait too. What about the bait, the people throwing shrimp? Of course, I'm not a big fan of croaker, so I'm not going to mention that. But for those throwing shrimp. Let's do that next as we put a bow on too, but this time of year is live shrimp season as well. What are your thoughts on that, Dean?
Well, croaker is king in the summertime. It does, it'll entice a lethargic fish. It'll get a bite when others won't. Shrimp on a popping cork is, it's not the easiest thing around here because there's so many pin perch. We've had just an explosion of pin perch, and I have theories on that, whether the decimation of the speckled trout gave the small fish, the perch, kind of a reprieve. It's their arch nemesis. Speckled trout just love to eat small finfish. So there is a definite chance for those guys to thrive while others kind of took a beat down. But popping cork with a shrimp on those same grass beds will catch fish. You can also hang a plastic shrimp, a DOA, a shrimp imitation on a popping cork. And you can get great results with that too. But live bait in the summer, any type of bait in the summer, will entice a lethargic fish into biting, and you know, and it will create a few more bites. Sticking with the challenge of plastic throughout the summer, it is a tough game, yeah, for sure. But you're gonna have days. It changes every week. The moon changes. The tide changes. One day they're there. One day they're not. If you stick with it, it still can be done. But it definitely does become a challenge. But the tropical activity that brews offshore, if we get a push of cool, fresh water, and we've had some amazing crystal clear green water coming in the channels, the beach, it looks like the Bahamas out there. You can swim out to the third sandbar, and you can see your feet. It's been an amazing place. So that influx of fresh, clean water that comes with tropical activity will turn them on, and you can have days where it will just be on fire, but they're not as consistent as it is in the fall. And of course, we sit around at this time of year just dreaming of the first cold front, yeah, whenever things shift gears again.
You know, we talked about the redfish and the pressure people are putting on redfish. And I know you had some strong feelings about that. Captain Scott and Caleb were laughing about it, about the conversations you guys have had off air. But what is, what, you know, what is your point on that? Because a lot of people have turned to the redfish. You were telling me that the redfish bite has been, as you just mentioned a little while ago, really, really finicky. But your thoughts on the redfish pressure and what people are doing and what the redfish are doing right now down here on the lower coast?
In the last month, the redfish action has changed dramatically. The pictures, you can tell from the action on social media that the redfish have just been a bit of a challenge, whether you're throwing bait, lures, or such. And that was a good question. I mean, there's a lot of mystery still in fishing about how those things go. No matter how many years, how many days you've been out there, they're still going to throw you curveballs. Until we can speak to the fish, until the fish comes up to this microphone and tells us what's going on, we're going to continue theorizing. But those guys have been a challenge. One of my theories, of course, is that a large fish like that, they require a lot of oxygen to pump through that body. They really do thrive when the water is cooler. In the summertime, they cannot metabolize food. Fish are a cold-blooded creature. So they actually, their body reacts to the temperature that they are in. So when they're very hot, they're a lot like us. They're just not going to eat as much. They're not going to eat that often. And when they do, their body doesn't metabolize that food into energy. So they're going to spend more time in between. And then, you know, those redfish, they're going to go and just hang in the channels. They're going to be in deep water. They're not going to venture on the flats, and they're certainly not going to be in kill mode. They're not hunting, prowling the flats, looking for things to eat. We'll definitely see that shift gears as the seasons change. And there is a season to this game. The summertime, you have challenges, but whenever we get into fall, even though fall has its challenges, there's great days that come and go. the summertime will be the same way. You just look for the different factors that produce those days. And right now, we happen to be on a new moon. Through the last 2 weeks, the full moon and the high water temperatures, it just makes things a challenge. So we've spent a lot of time. I have a network of guys that I talk to and keep up with. We compare notes every day, and it is quite similar across the board. But the amount of redfish that have been going across the cleaning tables has slowed down quite a bit the last couple weeks. I mean, you can see the difference in the seasons and what is produced in those seasons. So yes, at this time of year, a lot of guys shift to croakers, shift to live bait, and that emphasis does go to speckled trout in the summertime. And in spite of the pressure on the redfish, they give themselves a reprieve in the summer by going somewhere else. Yeah. They spend some time away from all the hooks. Mm-hmm. So with all the pressure, even though as much as we've talked about those things, they have gotten somewhat of a break through the last 2 weeks. So we look forward to seeing how that plays out for the rest of summer and then into fall.
It's interesting listening to you because, by the way, it's Slow Ride Guide Service. I'll get to that again later. But, you know, you do a lot of kayaking. You do a lot on your boat. And it's interesting listening to you. It's like the fish, you can find them, but I'm thinking for our listeners again that are coming down next week or next month or whatever. But it is a different game right now, as you just have been describing. So what is like somebody dragging their boat from wherever, Victoria or Corpus or wherever, just for the weekend? You know, what do you tell them in terms of, all right, so this is a different game right now in the summer, as you've just laid out. Try this, you know, like not specific spots, because it's a big bay system down here, but like your long drifts, your ledges, what else? And by the way, tackle as well, because I saw a video, you were using real light tackle in the video, and we're going to get to that in a second. That might make a difference. Like, so somebody coming down that's just like, man, I just want a heads up. Like, what should I try to do?
And yes, I have that conversation quite often. We have people calling. I have clients that fish with me, and then on other days, they'll bring their own boats. And just a broad overview is what I try to give them, because even if I put an X on the map and said, go to this spot, it's difficult to duplicate those conditions and such in that exact place. So then a broad overview of that, kind of like I had mentioned earlier, is you look for the edges of those drop-offs. You look for places that current flows closer to channels. So, and where we're at here in Redfish Bay, we are really blessed with a broad variety of that. The Corpus Christi Ship Channel cuts right through the middle of it. Massive amount of water flows through there. The Aransas Pass Shrimp Boat Channel is a direct connection straight to the Gulf of Mexico. That green water's been pouring in. Every time the tide changes, we have a major influx of water that comes in. So places that create current adjacent to the deeper flats, look for mullet, most importantly. That's another been a big key to that we haven't talked about much so far this morning. But if you're in an area that is just devoid of bait, if you've been there, and I'm not really patient. Patience is not one of my finer virtues. If I hit a spot and I'm there maybe 10 or 15 minutes, if I'm not seeing a flicker of bait or a mullet or anything, I mean, we move quickly. We hop around to a lot of spots, so we're always looking for the bait fish. The rods and reels and tackle and such, it stays the same throughout the year, but I'm a topwateraholic. I love it. Our flats here in my area are custom made for topwater fishing. It's vast, endless, shallow flats, which we probably spend, you know, 9 months of the year on the shallow grass. But at this time of year, we have to shift gears. So we were talking earlier about soft plastics, paddle tails on a heavier jig head than I fish with most of the year. A quarter ounce, getting down to those 6 feet depths and being able to bump it on the bottom is the difference between catching and not catching. So the weight of the lure, the weight of the, and a paddle tail also, which, so a lot of times during the year, I like to throw the rat tail worms on a very light jig head, even weedless sometimes. So that little tail looks a lot like a sand eel. We have a lot of sand eels in the grass, and that little pointed tail just waves in the grass, and it looks a lot like the eel. At this time of year, when those speckled trout are searching for fish, I like larger soft plastics with a paddle tail that very much imitates a swimming fish. So dropping it down on the bottom, jigging it a couple times, pumps a lot of vibration in the water, and then just a steady retrieve. It looks like what they expect to see down there. So it has a lot to do with getting a reaction out of those fish.
And that's excellent stuff, because, you know, you and by the way, I'm going to pull a Scott Null here. When you say worm, you mean soft plastic, because you always talk about it's how you wiggle your worm, basically soft plastic.
So as a lot of folks know, so much of this show's success has been not just doing the podcast or the radio show, but being able to separate specific segments into shorter audio hits. And of course, that can be good if you have, let's say, just a 30-minute commute or something like that. So that's why I always encourage people to subscribe to this podcast on Podbean. But another key element is video. Our Bite Me YouTube channel has a lot of on-water stuff as well. I want to talk about that part of it with Captain Dean next, because he does a great job with it. That's next in Hour 2 on Sports Radio 610.